This is Digital Story Podcast number 944, April 23rd, 2024. Today's theme is the Nikon 28 to 400 millimeter lens review. Does it measure up? I'm Derek Story. The specs seem almost too good to be true. The Nikon zoom has a focal length range of 28 to 400 millimeters. Yet it's compact and light. It features Synchro VR, enabling 5.5 stops of stabilization. It has weather-sealed construction and close focusing. But how does it perform? Tune in to today's TDS Photography podcast to find out. Plus, an OM system warning and On One Photo Raw 2024. I hope you enjoy the show. Well, I'm back in the studio. I made it back from Sedona, Arizona. We had such a great time in Sedona, I have to tell you. I drove all the way out, met with the guys. We had a wonderful workshop, great weather, beautiful photography, lots of good food, lots of good food. And then I made it back in good shape, and I'm here in the studio today. What I had waiting for me when I got back was the Nikon 28 to 400 millimeter lens. So right away, I had to put it on the ZF and do a little testing. And boy, oh boy, what a lens this is. First thing I should say is that on my camera body, ZF, I have the small rig grip. Now, I've enjoyed having that little grip on there because it has an Arca Swiss mount on the bottom, a plate on the bottom, so I don't have to worry about mounting it to any of my tripods, all that good stuff. And it does give me a little bit more to hang on to when I'm holding the camera. That hadn't really been an issue because I've been shooting mainly with prime lenses, smaller prime lenses, on that full-frame camera. Then the 28 to 400 millimeter arrived, and now I had my first real telephoto mounted on the ZF, and that small rig grip really is the perfect accessory to go with the lens and the camera body. It's really interesting because this lens has this crazy focal length, right? 28 to 400 millimeters, yet it's super light and super compact, which I thought was really interesting. When I first put the zoom on the camera, and I'm holding it with just one hand in my right hand, I'm going, this is amazingly balanced. What they did design-wise is that when the lens is set to 28 millimeters, it's very, very compact. I mean, it's less than 6 inches long, right? But then when you start to extend it and you turn this giant zoom ring collar, you know, so you're going 28 to 35 to 50, you know, all the way up the line, 105, 200, 300, 400. It just keeps going. It just keeps going. Well, the length of the lens is going too. So it virtually doubles in size when you go all the way out to 400. So you got to be careful, I guess. I hadn't done this in testing. But if you're like shooting, if you're shooting through bars or something, you got to be careful that because when you're at 28 millimeters, you'll probably have the room that you need. And then you start extending it. You could extend it, you know, right into something that you hadn't planned on doing. And you can do it fast because it's only like a half a turn of the zoom ring to go all the way from 28 to 400 millimeters. The design is just really nutty. Let's start by taking a look at the specs to really get our head around what Nikon has done with this lens that costs $1,296. It's a full frame coverage lens and it's f4 to f8. So that's the maximum aperture. So f4 at 28 millimeters, F8 at 400 millimeters. So that right away tells you, of course, you're not going to be doing interiors with this lens, right? This is not a lens for, you know, shooting inside a haunted house, right? This is an outdoor lens, a travel lens, a sport lens, a wildlife lens, everything that has light, because you do need light with this lens. It has an STM autofocus stepping motor, 5.5 stop VR image stabilization, and that's with Synchro VR, which is available on the ZF, the Z8, and the Z9. However, if you don't have one of those three cameras, do not worry, because you still have five stops with all the other Nikon cameras, the Z cameras. So you get an extra half a stop of stabilization with Synchro VR. Not a huge deal if you don't have those other cameras. Five stops is still amazingly good. There's a zoom lock switch that prevents unintentional lens extension, and it locks it at 28 millimeters, which is the most compact form factor for this lens. In terms of optical elements, 21 of them in 15 groups, 21 optical elements. It has a 9-blade aperture, and that creates a really nice bokeh. You wouldn't think of bokeh with a lens that's, you know, f4 to f8. But you get out there past 105 and with those aperture blades, and then suddenly, somehow, optically, they managed to create bokeh with this lens as well, which I thought was really cool. It's a weather-sealed construction, but I would say that it's light weather-sealed construction. It's not like an Olympus camera in that sense where you can just be in the pounding rain or, you know, hail or snow or whatever. However, you don't have to baby this lens either. You can go out in the elements. It can be wet and it will be fine. The front filter is 77 millimeters, standard Nikon millimeter. So you probably have a filter laying around that will work on this camera. And then it has a compact square lens hood that's included. And it reduces ghosting and allows zooming operation when it's inverted, because the zoomer is so big, the grip for the zoomer is so big that you can reverse this square lens hood and you still got plenty to hang on to there. So you can shoot with the lens hood either enabled or inverted. Either way, it doesn't interfere with the operation of the lens. Now at 28 millimeters, you have 7.9 minimum focusing distance, which means you can get really close to subjects. So this lens, in addition to everything else, is a very good close-up lens. I was amazed with the pictures I could take with it. I just kept going in and in and in. And even at the longer focal lengths, the minimum focusing distance is still quite good. It's not one of those things where it has to be, you know, 15 feet at 400 millimeters. It's very good all the way around. But I was surprised that I could shoot close up of flowers and things like that with it. Now it's 5.6 inches long at the wide angle setting, which is the smallest setting, 28 millimeters. And it weighs just 1.6 pounds. And I think this is very interesting, because if you think about the optics that it could replace if you're traveling, or if you decide, hey, I want to go to the zoo today, you know, and you're going to be outside all day, good light at the zoo, you really only have to bring this one lens, because you can do from wide angle to super telephoto. And it's interesting with a telephoto, when you're using it, you know, and our brains are sort of wired over the years that, okay, if we start at 28 millimeters and we're zooming, we kind of anticipate that's going to stop somewhere around 200 millimeters. Now, with my Olympus camera and my 40 to 150, which has an effective range of 80 to 300, I got spoiled. I go, oh, wow, now I can keep going and I get 300, which I love. I love that lens. This lens, you just sort of keep going and you go, wait, it's still going. It's still going. And you're going all the way to 400 millimeters. It's nutty. 1.6 pounds. And it feels really light. It doesn't even feel that heavy to me on the camera. All right, let's talk about some of the specifics here. Let's start with focusing. That STM stepping motor is very quiet, and it focuses quickly in good light, which you're going to be in when you're using this lens. Now, in low light, it is a tad slower, but it wasn't bad. And you're not going to be shooting in low light with this lens anyway. You're going to put something else on the camera. You're certainly not going to be shooting at a maximum aperture of, let's say, f7 indoors, right? That's a little nutty. So where you're going to use it, which is outdoors in good light, it focuses very fast. The build is good. It's amazingly balanced, like I said, on the full frame camera. And when you're racking it out, going all the way, it will actually double in length when you go all the way out to 400 millimeters. The zoom ring, by the way, is nicely damped and is very large. It's easy to grip. And like I said, it's only a half turn to go from wide angle to telephoto. I really like the lock switch that prevents accidental extension of the lens barrel. The metal mount is very nice. It clicked cleanly into the camera. And the weather sealing is really something nice to have on a lens that you're going to be using outdoors. This is what it's designed for. Now there's a control ring. It's easy to find. You don't have to look at the lens. You can find it while you're looking through the camera. And it can be programmed to a variety of functions, including manual focusing, exposure compensation, or aperture control. Let's get to image quality, right? Because it doesn't matter how cool the lens looks or how compact it is if it doesn't take good pictures. Surprisingly sharp for a lens that has this kind of zooming range. What I did was I tested it at f8. I just kept it at f8. Through all the settings, 28, 35, 50, 70, 105, 200, 300, and 400, standing in the same spot with a variety of texture. So I had buildings with straight lines. I had lines against the bright sky. I had foliage, you know, kind of all that stuff. A nice little test situation there. And then I viewed both JPEGs and RAWs, because I shot RAW plus JPEG, at 100%. In Capture One Pro. And it was interesting because the JPEGs and the RAWs definitely look different. Nikon JPEGs on the ZF are really, really, really good. They look terrific. And there's some minor corrections that happen with the JPEGs. For instance, some slight vignetting started to come into play around 100 millimeters on the lens, very mild on the corners. But you only saw it on the RAW files. You didn't see it on the JPEGs. Now, once we get a lens profile for this and from Adobe or from Capture One, whomever, then on the RAW files, that should go away as well. But right now, the JPEGs, for example, on vignetting, were clean all the way through all the focal lengths. Mild vignetting from a 100 to 400 with the RAW files. But that's without a lens profile right now. We don't have one yet. There was no CA anywhere to be seen, which is very impressive. Again, for a zoom lens, that many elements. I mean, it's just going, you know, I was looking at the edges of the building against the bright sky, and they were just nice and clean. It was really fun to look at the detail. Like, I had shingles and eaves and all sorts of stuff in these test photos. And it was really fun to look at all that detail and just be impressed with how sharp everything was, especially in the center part of the frame. Now, as I racked out, there was a little bit of fall off on the sides of the frame. But honestly, I would have to do more testing to really evaluate that, because I think some of that fall off at the longer focal lengths was just depth of field. I don't think it was actually lens sharpness. So I would need to do a test with a brick wall or something that was flat where I could really measure that. And we're going to see plenty of tests, lab tests, all that kind of stuff on this lens. People who are a lot better at this sort of thing than I am, I'm just doing a casual field test with it. But when we start to see some of the more serious lens tests with it, we'll get a better feel for that. If that little bit of softness on the edges is lens performance, or if it's just fall off from, you know, depth of field. Because, I mean, when you're shooting at 300, 400, even at f8, the depth of field falls off really fast, really fast. Overall, I was super happy with the image quality performance of this lens. And I was right away thinking, man, I want to go, I want to go out to Safari West with this lens, which we're going to be doing. We got a workshop later on this year where we're going to be going to Safari West. I said, I cannot wait to get out to Safari West with this lens to do everything from wide angle when that ostrich comes up and gets in my face to shooting Cape Buffalo, you know, that are off in the distance, because Cape Buffalo always have to be off in the distance because they're very dangerous animals. And just to be able to do everything in between with this one lens, I'm just really jonesing to try it out there. So bottom line on this lens, I think it's a great value at $1,296. I have a link to it in the show notes. You can just click on the link and it'll take you right over to that page. If you're traveling or working outdoors, honestly, it can replace every lens in your bag, dramatically lightening up your load. What you can do, just to cover your bases, and I think what I'm going to do when I do more testing with this lens, is keep the Nikkor Z, the 26mm f2.8 pancake in my pocket, and then have the zoom lens on there. That way, if I run into something where I need a little bit more width, you know, a little wider lens, or I run into a situation where I'm dealing with low light, then I've got that 26mm f2.8 in my pocket, just swap it out for the zoom lens. Quite honestly, I think with those two optics for an outdoor shoot, you'd be in very good shape. By the way, the 28-400mm looks great on the ZF. It's easy to operate, and if you're in good light, it's hard to beat. This is a highly recommended lens. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the more meticulous lab tests on the image quality. But in terms of my initial tests out in the field, I was very pleased. Highly recommended. OHM System warns Mac OS changes may prevent you from updating your camera. This is an article on petapixel.com, and there's a link to it in the show notes. Now, before you get excited about this headline, I have to tell you two things. One is, there's an update to this article that they put in there, a further clarification from OM System. And then I just did an update to my OM1 via my iPhone, and it worked great. So I'll read you what's going on here, because there might be something to this, but don't get overly excited. This all started out when OM System issued a warning to users of Apple computers saying that due to security enhancements associated with the OS, it is possible that updating cameras through a Mac computer may not work correctly. And then there was clarification from OM System, and here's what they said. They further clarified that it will continue to support both Mac OS and Windows environments in the future, and that there are no current issues. The instructions noted below are in preparation of a potential future USB security protocols that may affect compatibility in Windows and Mac. That's what OM System said. So there isn't an issue right now. It's a preemptive strike, so to speak. Obviously, they're in the developer program and they see what's coming down the pike, and they anticipate there might be problems. Now, hopefully, they could have an update of their own to augment, you know, their existing software to prevent that problem from happening, but we'll wait and see. OM System goes on to say, we do not have specific details about the potential issues or changes that may arise. Because there are no current issues, we do not have plans to post information on our US site at this time. So suddenly, I'm starting to see a lot of smoke and no fire. Now, the reason why I'm doing this story today is because you may have just seen the headline or the first paragraph somewhere, Petapixel or somewhere else, and then suddenly think that your OM System camera is not going to be able to be updated anymore. That just isn't the case. You can update it now on Mac and Windows. Chances are good you'll be able to update it in the future. There may be a problem in the future, and hopefully whatever may happen will get ironed out quickly, right? So they go on, and there's a whole story that, honestly, I think you don't even have to read. because they're talking about something that really isn't a problem right now. What I did was, when I saw this story and I started anticipating people getting nervous, I go, okay, the ultimate workaround is just not to use your Mac or Windows computer at all, right? I have OiShare, the app, on my iPhone. And I know that there was a firmware update. So I said, I'm just going to do it with my iPhone right now and see what happens the way I've done it before. Make sure there's no changes. And it's very easy. You have the iPhone communicate with your camera. The iPhone will download the firmware update, and then it will send it over to the camera, and the camera will do the updating. Now, one thing I will tell you, before you do a firmware update with either iPhone or an Android phone, make sure you save your settings, because there is that option before you download the firmware update. You'll see it's right there on the same page, on the settings page. Save your settings first, then get the firmware, then apply the firmware, then restore your settings. That will just save you a lot of work, especially if you've customized your camera in any way. Saving those settings will make that firmware update a piece of cake. If you don't save your settings first, then you'll have to go through and get everything customized again, because the firmware update will restore your camera to factory settings without saving settings. So save your settings, do the firmware update, and then load your settings back into the camera. All of this kerfuffle right now is really about nothing. So don't panic. Don't let people tell you, oh yeah, OM system, you know, you're not going to be able to do firmware updates if you have a Mac. That just isn't the case. It isn't the case right now. I honestly doubt it will be in the future. We'll see how that goes. Either way, you can use your phone, Android phone, or iPhone to do firmware updates and not even have to mess with anything on the computer. On One Photo Raw is a doozy and gets another interim update. And this is on fstoppers.com. I have a link to the article in the show notes. Now, this article is fairly in-depth, so I'm not going to read too much of it. I'm going to give you the opening paragraph, and then I'm going to go down to the pros and cons and the conclusion. All the detail in the middle, you can read yourself through the link in the show notes. On One Photo Raw is a comprehensive image processing tool designed for photographers. It includes asset management, image development, and editing, plus a host of AI-driven tools, including noise reduction and de-blurring. The latest update improves the performance of these tools. And it gets into all of this stuff here. I mean, we're talking about a lot of stuff in this update. Speedy asset management, denoising and de-blurring, Brilliance AI, which is really cool. I really like Brilliance AI. It's a one-click adjustment tool that was previously a bit hit or miss with RAW files on my OM1. This is the author talking on my OM1. It's cool that he has an OM1, isn't it? Although it worked better with other cameras' RAW files, this version seems to give hugely improved results. The update includes support for the OM1 Mark II RAW files as well. You know this guy's cool, right? Okay. AI keywording. Machine Learning Style Advisor. There's a Style Advisor included in the OM1 Photo Raw as well. It analyzes and learns from your adjustments and how you want your photos to look. It then uses what it has learned to apply your style to other images. If the AI hasn't seen enough of your adjustments to have learned your style, the OM1 Team Style are included and you can try those. Kind of cool, isn't it? Swapping skies, pasting pixels, all that kind of stuff. Let's go to what I liked and what can be improved. This is the author again. What I like about OM1 Photo Raw 2024. It has a comprehensive array of cataloging, developing, editing tools in one program. Extremely fast cataloging, searching, and switching between modules. The immediate application of denoise and deblurring tools with full screen previews. Very pleasing and improved RAW development and image editing results. Dual screen support. superb portrait enhancement and image resizing tools, affordability with a perpetual license and subscription options, superior in-person user support, and a comprehensive range of high-quality video tutorials on the On One website. What could be improved next time? It sometimes struggled with automatic masking of the sky with complex borders, although this was fixable using the perfect brush. Default values of denoise and deblurring are set to 100%, which is too much. Although comprehensive, I feel the user interface in the browse module could still be improved and made more intuitive. Tethering is only available for some Canon and Nikon cameras. Other brands are currently not supported. And since he shoots with an OM-1, we're guessing that he doesn't like that, that he isn't supported. In conclusion, the latest, albeit minor, update to On One Photo Raw has brought further improvements to what is growing to be a formidable all-in-one program for processing images. On One has competition, and this program has unique selling points and a level of performance that sets it above much of the rest. It's a different approach to editing, focused on photographers and not bulked out with lots of tools we never use. So he definitely likes it. A 30-day trial of On One Photo Raw by clicking here is a link in the show notes. I also have a tile on the digital story for On One. So for Photo Raw On One, in fact, so you can click on that tile as well if you don't want to go to the article and mess around with that. Photo Raw 2024 for standalone use only is $69.99. for an upgrade, or $84.99 for new customers. However, I have a coupon code for you. So click on the tile in the digital story and then use coupon code when you check out, THEDIGITALSTORY20, THEDIGITALSTORY20, and that should get you 15% off when you make your purchase, whether it's new or upgrade or all that kind of stuff. THEDIGITALSTORY20. And I have that coupon code all in uppercase. Not sure it makes any difference or not if it's all in uppercase, but go ahead and do it all in uppercase. So anyway, it looks like a good update. On One Photo Raw is a terrific application. The AI tools are becoming very powerful. And I just really love seeing that they're doing such a great job with updating it. I'm looking forward to testing it myself. I'm going to use some of my pictures from Sedona to test this latest version, but this guy's already run it through the ringer and he seems to like it a lot. Just a few final notes from the Spring and Sedona Photography Workshop. You know, we were out there working in the Sedona area, Cottonwood, Jerome, and then all over the place, right? We went out to Petroglyphs. We rode a train through Verde Canyon. I mean, it was really something. For those of you who've never attended one of our physical workshops, I highly encourage you to do it. There's just something about it. The way that we do it, it's very accepting, right? You don't have to worry about what skill level you're at or any of that kind of stuff at all. Everyone is accepted at the level they are, right? The whole idea is to get out there and to hang out with other photographers who are as passionate about the craft or hobby as you are, to have that camaraderie, to eat good food, to see pretty things, and then use your style and your technique to take pictures. And then we share those pictures at the end of the week. And when I say share, I don't mean photo competition. I don't mean judging. We are literally sharing a handful of pictures and saying, these are the things that I experienced with my camera, and I want to share them with you. I tell you, it is just a great way to end the week, seeing everyone's different approach to photography and experiencing the week that we had just lived through their eyes. It's a phenomenal experience. It really is. We have two more physical workshops coming up this year. And then we're working on the slate for next year as well. I just wanted to plant that seed because if you haven't done this, I think this is something that you would truly enjoy. It's a great getaway. It's fun. And you come home with a lot of pictures. I mean, what's not to like? Anyway, thanks to everyone who contributed to our Sedona workshop. You guys were great. You were fantastic to hang out with. I enjoyed your company and I loved your pictures. Okay, stick here, a little virtual camera club news. I want to give a big shout out to our Inner Circle members, the folks that support this podcast month in and month out. We had a few of them out there in Sedona. And Inner Circle members, they're invested, right? They're invested in this community. It's $5 a month, or you can get a discount if you pay annually. It's not a huge investment, but I tell you, they're invested because not only the money, but they're invested. They want this to succeed. They want this to keep going. They want the online workshops. They want the Inner Circle online site to keep going. They want the podcast to keep going. They want all of this to keep going because this is one of their communities. And for some folks, this is their community for photography. And so Inner Circle members keep this community alive and vibrant and moving forward. And I just want to thank all of our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. And if you want to join us, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. Nose around a bit and you can sign up right there. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. And finally, our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. Boy, oh boy, do I have some shots from Sedona that I want to print. And we were talking about printing, you know, when we were looking at each other's pictures and we're going, boy, that would look really good on glossy, or that would be really nice on metallic, or that would be really good on a matte paper. You know, it's really interesting that when you print, you start thinking about these things as you're editing your pictures and as you're looking at your pictures and going, man, I think this twilight scene would be dynamite on a super glossy paper. Things like that. It's interesting for me that what you choose to print on and how you choose to print has such a huge impact on the final image. It gives you a whole nother level of control. When we look at a picture on our computer monitor, well, the monitor is somewhat fixed, right? You know, it's backlit, it's glossy, yada, yada, yada. But paper isn't like that. Paper, you can go from matte to metallic paper and really have an enhancement to the image that you've created. And that's what Red River Paper allows you to do, is make those enhancements to really get that image to the point how you exactly want it to look. Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can click on that. You can explore all the different surfaces. There's lots of information on how to pick the right surface for your photography. Go over there today, take a look, fire up that inkjet printer, and see what you can do with your images. I think you can take them to a whole new place using Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed this show. I'm back in Santa Rosa working on more stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.